Oh, just be a sponge, learn, right? And go broad for where you're going to be learning. You know, if you're at a firm and they've got certain amount of training, that's great. Go broader. You should be reading Kitsis. You should be reading Carl Richards. You should be reading Seth Godin, you know, things outside of the industry, because all of that is going to bring you aha moments and you know, come up with your way of having conversations with people and your way of doing it. So, yeah, I think that's been the most valuable thing to me over the years.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that yet the term financial advisor would clear the room so fast at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers of financial services and the providers of those services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and provide tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. You see, as providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with consumers to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. So it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today we have Stephanie McCullough. Stephanie, you founded Sophia Financial in 2011 after 14 years as a financial advisor with the goal to empower women to make wise financial decisions and reduce their money stress. You have also found that women of a certain age are faced with a particular set of problems around the goal of retirement. And I know this to be true because I have a lot of female women clients, especially women who are facing it on their own. And you believe that the traditional financial services industry is ill-equipped to handle this problem. You and your team provide holistic financial planning as well as investment management and are devoted to helping your clients build confidence, resilience, and joy in their lives. And I love this motto of it's not just about the money. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thanks, Dominique. It's great to be here.
Yeah. I love this topic. I think, you know, when I saw the Investopedia list, which you were on and I were on, I was like, there are some people I want to talk to, and you were one of them. So I'm so glad you agreed to come on to talk about this, you know, this topic of realizing the benefits of more diverse opinions. And I mean, let's just go ahead and get it out there. Like, there's a lot of bias in this industry because of how concentrated it is on a particular demographic. And it's, you know, it's the, you know, the white male, and that's pretty typical. And I think obviously, you know, we're changing and we're evolving in the industry. And those are some of the things I want to kind of talk about, not from just a gender standpoint, but also from a cultural or different background, ethnicities and things of that nature. So I really appreciate your expertise on this matter.
Absolutely. No, it's something I've gotten more passionate about as the years have gone by.
Yeah. That's good. Let's talk about, I want to kind of do this in, I guess, three kind of umbrellas, right? The first one, kind of having a more open mindset, because I think it starts there. I'm a big mindset person, like, hey, mindset dictates behaviors, actions, the whole nine. And I think I want to first hear what your thoughts are about where you think the industry is on having an open mindset. Like, where we stand in 2021 right now?
Ugh. I mean, I think it is changing, and yet probably not fast enough. It's interesting because the advisors I tend to hang out with are, you know, kind of the folks like you and me who are open-minded, who are, you know, kind of trying to change things. And then I'll go out and talk to people outside of the industry, and they'll tell me how unusual my approach is. And I'm thinking, no, it's not. All my friends do the same thing. And like, oh, I'm hanging out with a certain selected group of people who, you know, kind of think like I do. So I remember the first time I went to it was the first XYPN conference in 2016. And it was younger people, and it was a diverse group of people. And the motto on the back of the t-shirt was, not your father's financial planning conference. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I joined the industry through my father's financial planning firm. So I thought this was hysterical. And I bring the t-shirt back and I show my dad. He didn't think it was quite as funny.
That's funny.
So I feel like it is changing. And yet, you know, then I'll go out and meet other people who are kind of in some of the more traditional platforms of financial advisors / financial salespeople. And it's not changing that much.
Yeah. Like, so I was actually having a coaching call with some people in my community last night. And I was saying that, you know, we have this big, huge dinosaur. Maybe one of the big dinosaurs was like a brontosaurus or something like that. But anyways, that's the model that the financial industry is. And then underneath that, we have this financial planning profession. You know, we got financial therapy, we got financial counseling. And in those little pockets, I think people are doing really great work. And on the other end, consumers of financial services, clients are actually getting a lot of value out of that. And I wonder how long it takes for that big brontosaurus to kind of just die off. And then the vultures are coming in and scavenging the bones and it's just a skeleton left. I don't know how long that's going to take. Do you have any opinion on that?
Oh, I think a lot longer than we would like. I really do. You know, I mean, I'll go to events for kind of, you know, women advisors, and I'll meet people and I'm not bashing insurance. There are fabulous people who do insurance. I'm licensed to sell insurance. And I'll meet people who have kind of, you know, that's the inroad that they found into the industry. I feel like a lot of people kind of stumble into this career. And like when they find one inroad, they think that's the only one. And I want to take them aside in the ladies' room and like, there's another way, come over to the light side, you know, like, but they don't realize. And yeah. I didn't realize for the longest time, right? I kind of came in with my dad's firm. I saw the way he did it. I thought that was the only way to do it. And early on, I was like, oh, I can't do this work because I don't have an MBA and I'm not a natural born salesperson. That's literally what I thought. And the first time I worked with an executive coach, I happened to meet someone at a, you know, networking meeting. I didn't know what coaching was. And he gave me like a free session. And by the end of it, it's like, I need to work with you so badly. Cause I'm like, I feel like there's things I love about this work and the model I've seen, I don't fit. So I feel like we need to do a better job of showing people who are interested in the industry all the different ways you can do this work and all the different models there are so that they can then pick. But that's the folks who recruit don't have any interest in showing their people they've recruited that there are other ways to do it.
Yeah. So I'm resonating with you. It's kind of like a two-pronged problem, right? That feeds into each other. If the industry doesn't become more diverse, including showing different pathways of what financial professionals look like, then it's hard for the consumers of financial services, like for us to reach those more diverse groups, because everybody has their own kind of thing that's going on. And I wonder what your thoughts are is how we best prepare for that. I mean, obviously the type of work that you're doing, the type of work that I'm doing, that's all very helpful, but I don't know, like, I don't know how quickly that moves the needle. Let's put it that
right.
way.
Right. Right. Sadly, right. We're only two and there are more of us, but still, yeah, I mean, to be able to serve a more diverse population, because that's where the country is going and that's where the money is going, you know, not just from like the generational shift of money, but, you know, as more, I want to believe this is true, right? As the world gets more diverse and the world of work gets more diverse, more people of diverse backgrounds will have an opportunity to build wealth. And even as I'm saying this, I'm doubting myself, right? Like financial advisors don't only work with wealthy people. Financial planning is valuable to all humans who have to deal with money, which is all of us, sadly, right? Like that's the world we live in. So I'll meet people all the time like, oh, maybe I'll be able to work with you when I've gathered some more money. Like, oh, but actually really good financial planners, right? Real financial planners can help you get there and figure out, or whether it's a financial counselor, or financial coach, right? Can help you get to that point where you have assets. It's not just about the investing. And I feel like that's a piece of what we need to get better at as an industry.
Yeah. And I know the constraint, if I'm just guessing, is the fact that the AUM model is such entrenched, ingrained, and that is what a lot of firms live by, right? You know, it's the bread and butter. And therefore, that's the marketing machine. And that's what everything's around. Before that, obviously, it was pretty transactional around the insurance. But now, you know, AUM is pretty entrenched. I wonder, though, pivoting a little bit from that and still staying on the open mind thing is Chloe Moore said something a couple of weeks ago. I was talking to her and Luis Rosa from about the BLX internship. And she's like, you know, there's this whole networking effect that happens with, you know, Dominique hangs around Dominique people, you know, Stephanie might hang around Stephanie people. And then like, so what obligation do you feel we have to change our networking patterns so that more people get exposed to this? Before you answer that, I have a friend that works in, you know, she's, she travels around, well, pre-COVID, she traveled around and basically spoke to at a lot of historically Black colleges and universities about financial planning. And she went to a university, and this was in 2019, 2020, I think it was in 2019. And no one in the room, a room full of people, knew about financial planning as a profession. And that's in 2019, which is ridiculous, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So how do we change that? How do we change that?
I'm not sure I know. I've been beating the drum at my alma mater, trying to go back to the people in finance and in the, you know, just anyone taking economics and has an interest in numbers. And I've spoken to, you know, kids in school, super smart people who were like, I'm not sure investment banking's for me. I'm like, that's great, because there's a zillion other things you can do. Like, let me tell you about what I do. And they have never been exposed to it. You know, they're at supposedly a top university program. It's not considered a career path. I don't get it. And I've talked to the, you know, heads of the departments. I've had a few interns. I've, you know, volunteered to come to our campus and talk anytime. You know, I'll pay my own way. You just like, get me in front of some people to say there are other career paths that might be more fulfilling than making money for rich people.
Yeah. It's so weird, though. It, like, to your point, I've seen a lot of the same thing. Now, my alma mater, Prairie View A&M University, which actually is a historically Black college and university, has a financial planning minor. But even in talking with the program director and noticing some of the things, you know, it's way different to say you're going to have a, you know, college a CFP board certified program and then Texas Tech. Like, that, those are big differences, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I don't know how we get more Texas Techs across the university map and to start attracting that pipeline of talent. But yeah, we've got to do it, because there's so many benefits that we can reap. And so I want to see, like, some of the things that you've already mentioned. What are maybe the benefits you've kind of witnessed in your career from, you know, kind of seeing these more diverse? So, like, as we kind of move from having an open mindset, like, you work with women, like that's the focus of your practice. And I don't know the makeup of your firm, but maybe you can kind of speak to how those diverse, more diverse opinions start to reap benefits for the profession and for clients.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this, and I'm not sure I've seen a whole lot of evidence in the industry and in the profession. I mean, certainly among, you know, the people who are starting their own practices or their own firms, and I haven't been a part of enough bigger firms or seen enough close up to see, you know, is there change happening inside? But I do have an experience which, I don't know, instructive to me. I've been involved with a group in Philadelphia called Women's Way, which is a nonprofit devoted to the promotion of women and girls. And they have something called the Women's Economic Security Initiative, which is really trying to deal with economic insecurity and really the gender wealth gap in the Philadelphia area. But I love the director. Her whole point is that we really can't tackle this issue unless we center the voices of women with lived experience of economic insecurity. So unless we're not just talking to them, but putting them on the committees, women who've been there and lived through that, and, you know, involving them in designing the grant making or designing the programs, then we're probably not even asking the right questions. So of course, we're not necessarily going to get to programs that are effective. So seeing how passionate she's been about that, and then working with women who've, you know, lived through homelessness and, you know, eviction and, you know, crises of financial issues that have been in no part their fault, right? But having them at the table has completely changed how this group is approaching their work. So again, not in the industry, but it makes a huge difference.
No, I think I like that. And when you were talking, I was thinking about a story. Maybe at the foundation of that is, what is the money story? What is the talk track that the client is, you know, telling themselves? I remember I was working with a client. She's now divorced, but at the time, I remember her making this statement when we first start working together. And this is her husband present, and she's like, "I have money anxiety." And so at the point in time, I knew they did well, but I didn't really know the numbers. And I was like, what do you have money anxiety over? You got plenty of money. But her money story,
yeah,
and the talk track she had been playing gave her money anxiety. And yeah, it's so key that you're saying, like, those type of voices need to come to the table to talk about where that's come from, why that's the case, you know, all that kind of stuff, in order for change to actually happen that is effective for those groups of people. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Totally. I think we have to get better at asking good questions of our clients, right? Of whomever we're trying to serve, and listening, right? I mean, kind of the older generation, when I first started 24 years ago, they were the type that they knew what you needed before you walked in the room. Like, they might ask a couple of questions to let you talk, but then they were going to show their expertise and they were going to give you what you needed, no matter. And I remember being in meetings with my father and, like, wanting to kick him under the table. I mean, like, shut up. The widow is trying to speak and tell you what she's experiencing. But that wasn't his training and, you know, how it worked then. So I feel like, you know, kind of more taking that coaching approach, like, the client actually knows what's right for them and they do have answers. They might not know the different financial vehicles and what the heck a small cap fund is, but, like, we're the guide in a foreign land, right? We speak the language, but we don't know what journey they want to go on, where they're coming from, what they want to do along the way. I really think that collaborative approach is going to serve us all well.
No, I love that, guide in the foreign land, because that's a theme, I think, that is shifting how financial advice is rendered, whether you're a coach or a therapist or a planner or whatever. I think that's just something that you need to be thinking about. It's kind of funny, you know, we have technology these days, and I use Zoom. I've exclusively pretty much been a virtual practice even before the pandemic. And I have this part of Zoom that I don't know when it triggers, but every once in a while it sends me this report and gives me insights to the call. So it'll tell me for, like, a 30 or a 45 minute or 60 minute consultation, how much talking I did versus how much talking the client did or the prospective client.
Nice.
And it's already, it's always very, very eye opening, because I think I ask really good questions. I'm an attentive listener and I'm active listening. And then, like, I see that I dominated the conversation with from a minute standpoint. And I'm like, golly, I gotta do better on that. But you raise another point about the coaching. This is another point in the conversation I had with my community last night, which was this marriage between traditional financial advice and financial coaching, which, let's call it, last 20 years to be generous. How do you think those marry together? Do you see a more converged experience with those two disciplines in the future, or, like, what are your thoughts on that?
I certainly hope so. I mean, working with that first coach that I met, and that I've worked with several coaches myself since then, that has really informed the approach that I take with my clients, right? I mean, I'm certainly not a trained coach, and I like to think that I take a coaching approach to it. But once, something that was really formative for me early on in my career was taking a 5-day training with the Kinder Institute of Life Planning.
George Kinder,
and I feel like
that whole
approach is very questions-based and very much, you know, we're trying to align the client's money with their values and get at what's most important to them, have them build the life they want to live. And you can't do any of that unless you're kind of, you know, taking a coaching approach. So those are the two things that I think really formed how I approach things. Maybe I'm assuming that my friends in the industry, right, my other advisor friends, do take a similar approach. I think they do, but I'm still not sure that that's the norm in the industry. And I don't know how to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's just, you know, so Sandra Davis is a friend and she has the financial fitness coach. Obviously, there's the accredited financial counselor from the AFCPE. And those are just two, though. And those are, you know, drastically different. I know they were partnered at a time. I guess my point in saying that is there's such a small emphasis on the behavioral finance component, behavioral economics, and, you know, all the stuff that Daniel Kahneman did, all that work, which is very key to what we do. So small a component in even the financial planning curriculum. You know, they just bumped it up a little bit, but it's like almost the financial, let's call it the next generation financial professional of the future is going to have a financial coach on staff or know this stuff themselves. At least that's my opinion.
I agree. 100%. And that's what's going to really move the needle, right? If we're talking about the wealth gap and helping more folks kind of, you know, I think the world will be a better place when more women and people of color control more money, right? So how do we get there? Carl mentioned this when he was on your show, right? A lot of this stuff is simple, but is not easy, right? And the stuff we're asking our clients to do is simple. Live below your means. Put money aside for the future. That is simple and not easy. And behavioral finance tells us why.
Yeah.
And to me, it tells us that it's not the client's fault. It's not a character flaw. And I love sharing that with clients and when I speak to groups, right? I love talking about the behavioral finance stuff because you can see people's shoulders kind of go like, oh,
yeah,
it's not my fault. It's not that I'm a stupid person that I bounced that check last year or whatever it might be. Nobody writes checks anymore. But, you know, I think, yes, we've got to wind that into it. But then another part of the issue is that people in the, you know, the public clients, they don't know that that's what they need either.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of make it hard as a profession because we call ourselves different things and clients don't know really what we do. And then they really don't know what they're looking for. You know, sometimes someone might come to you or me and they really need an accountant or they need a tax professional or an attorney, you know. Yeah. And I don't think we make it any easier.
No, you're right. I often joke and I don't think it's this funny, but I go, you want to clear a dinner party, start saying you're a financial advisor. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You're able to clear the room. It is because I think, you know, you ask 10 people on the street, what does a financial advisor do? You get 10 different answers, which, you know, in 2021, it's kind of sad. But I want to go back to the point that you made, you know, this whole notion about behavioral finance, the impact that it has and really empowering the client with the knowledge that it isn't their fault. We got this marketing machine that makes you feel like you got to buy everything. You know, you get to a certain age. You may have adult children you're still taking care of and it's hard to tell them no. It's, you know, right? It's all these different factors that weave in that make personal finance way more personal than finance.
Yeah.
I wonder what role do you see as we kind of shift this to say, okay, let's prepare the next generation. If we were writing a manual, me and you, Stephanie, right today and
all
say,
right,
how do we prepare the next generation for these problems that we've kind of bubbled up? Like what type of skill set would that person be developing?
I think it's a combination of the scientific knowledge of behavioral finance, right? Like the stuff Daniel Kahneman's written about and you know, the Dan Ariely and like all the research behind it, but also like, how do you actually bring that into a conversation with an individual who's feeling money anxiety and who's stressed about this stuff, right? How do you, and I think it's a learning process. I was having a conversation with a client yesterday who has inherited quite a bit of money. We were saying, okay, in 5 years when you and your husband retire, we'll use this pot of money first. And just the idea of spending it, luckily she was open with me and she said, my stomach is clenching, thinking that in 5 years, like this has been security to me knowing I had this money. Now I've got to spend it. You got to tell me I got to drain it down. So now I have to think, okay, what are the ways without shaming her that I can talk to her? I've got 5 years, luckily, but like get her over that real fear and hesitation she's got about spending any of this money. She worked so hard and her parents worked so hard to save. So yeah, I'm not sure if I'm completely answering your question. It's very personal. It's very intimate. I always tell my clients, like, we're going to be having intimate conversations and you need to feel comfortable getting financially naked with whomever you choose to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, these are all terms that I've used before. It's so funny. We haven't met before today. And these are all terms I've used before, which I know we're on the same wavelength with that. It's kind of weird. I say, definitely, I don't make light of our work. It's just, I've been doing it for so long. I try to come up with simple ways to do what we do that seem, I guess from the, you know, the marketing machine, you know, kind of complex, but I go, financial planning is nothing more than taking your limited time and money and spreading it across unlimited choices. And then people go, oh,
like
okay, all right, I get that. Because at some point you've 20, 25, 30, whatever years, you've exchanged your human capital for financial capital.
Right.
And now you got to figure out what I'm going to do with that, right? Like nobody just works for nothing. Like it's right. a reason that they want that money, whether it's an inheritance or whatever. You know, I love to use Chris Rock's definition of wealth, which was, I think Oprah asked him this and said, what's your definition of wealth? He's like, having options. And so yeah. like you want to give yourself options. That's essentially what it is. And everybody's level of optionality is different.
Yeah.
Right. And there's no shame in that. But, you know, I think our world puts pressure and competition on each other to say you need to keep up with the Joneses. Dominique, you need to have a practice as big as Stephanie, you know, all this other kind of stuff, which really doesn't make a difference. When we're talking about the skill set for the next gen financial professional, how do you think specifically they can help close the wealth gap that we've mentioned before?
I mean, I do feel like a part of it is that personal conversation and assuring folks that like, hey, no one taught us this stuff. We don't come by it naturally, right? Behavioral finance shows us that human beings are wired to be bad with money. Bringing down that shame and blame, like, you know, you don't know what a retirement plan is. You don't know how to use it. Okay. We can handle that. We can tackle that, right? I think it's having those much more intimate, personal, non-judgmental conversations, right? Meeting the person wherever they may be. But then also I think a part of, and I don't know how to fix this, but a part of what I've discovered over the years is that, you know, you can lead them to water, you can lead them to the financial advisor, but you can't make them be ready to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
Right. I have, you know, friends and clients, oh, I keep telling my cousin to call you. Right. She's not going to call until she's ready to really reveal. Yeah. Right. Until she's ready to really reveal it. So I don't know how to fix that. And yet even I feel like sometimes the training systems are like, oh, you must go through this 12-point plan with every client. If the client's only ready to talk about that and you can make an impact with one little piece. Yeah. Awesome. Right. And you've done something in an assuring way that's built some trust and gotten them to take a step. And then they feel like, oh, look at that. You know, that feels better. Maybe I can take the next step now.
Yeah.
Somehow meeting them where they are.
So those two phrases, meeting them where they are and then building that trust, right? Because, and this is going to be controversial. Well, but maybe not because I don't see the letters behind your name. I have them behind my name. But so the CFP curriculum is going to say, this is how you build a financial plan. If Dave Smith comes to you with X amount of money and his child wants to do this or and you go to this college or he wants to retire, then this is the formula you need to put. And I'm like, the reality of that is, as a first year or second year associate, you're not going to be talking to Dave Smith. You might be collecting some documents so that I or Stephanie can talk to Dave Smith, but you won't. So right. I was like, how relevant is the all your eggs in one basket trying to sit for the CFP exam? I was like, now that it does have some context and some credence. Don't get me wrong. I am one myself. However, your transferable skill set as a career changer, de-escalating conflict, communication, active listening, bedside manner. I was like, all these things I would rather you have than the technical knowledge because I can teach you that stuff all day.
Yes, totally. Totally. I mean, I'll meet people and they say, oh, I could never do what you do. I'm bad at math. I'm like, I got calculators and I got spreadsheets and formulas. I don't do the math. I can explain it to you. I do the people stuff.
Yeah.
Like I do the emotional stuff. And I totally agree. That is much more important. I mean, I can Google and I've done it, right? I'm on a meeting with a client. I'm Googling, wait, what's the simple IRA again? What are the rules around it? I don't have all that in my head.
We do that. Yes, we do that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I want to free up the aspiring financial professional to be like, you don't have to be this repository of knowledge, like that you have to, at the drop of a dime, know what the contribution level is for a 401k plan right now. They change it every year. They keep on moving
it. I got my cheat sheet right here. I pull it out all the time. That's why they print them.
No, I love that. I love that. So we've talked about a lot of things. And as we bring this in for the landing, I know you told me in the green room, you do these financial wellness webinars for Gen X women. So talk about that a little bit. You know, I got a predominant audience of aspiring and existing financial professionals, but there may be that consumer financial services that are like, oh, you know, I would really, really love to learn more about that. So I'll give you some space and some opportunity to kind of talk about what you do in those.
Thank you. You know, I started out by doing some workshops in friends' living rooms. and we like they invited their friends. I'm like, hey, I've got this friend. She's a financial planner. She's not scary. We're going to talk about some money stuff. And my original topic was the top five personal finance topics women avoid but shouldn't. And I didn't talk much in these. I would like to have the Zoom analysis. But, you know, I would kind of introduce the topic, you know, kind of give my perspective on why I think it's hard to talk about and then open the room. And the great thing was when everyone left, they're like, oh, I didn't realize I wasn't the only one who was stressed about this or, you know, worried I hadn't asked for a raise or, you know, hadn't talked to my parents about where their money is, all that kind of stuff, right? Like all those big topics. And then beginning of 2020, I had been thinking about trying to do that virtually. And I actually had scheduled my first one on Zoom and then pandemic and everybody was doing webinars instead. So yeah, I've done a variety of topics. I mean, I feel like if you're in a position where you can do that, you know, from a compliance standpoint, nobody's telling you can't, get out there and talk to people, you know? I mean, it doesn't have to be long. It can be, you know, people have short attention spans. Do it really briefly, right? Back to Carl Richards' Play in Traffic, right? I have a sticker over here from ConvertKit, teach everything you know, right? If you know a bit and you feel like your friends and people don't know about that, teach that. Go out there, just open the conversation. I think the more we can normalize talking about money, the better off everyone's going to be. Especially, you know, the research shows that women learn best by sharing our stories. But if we're not allowed to talk about money because it's the last taboo, how the heck are we going to learn it? So that's kind of my goal with the webinars.
Yeah, yeah. And where can they find information on that? Is that on your website?
It is. So it's Sophia Financial, Sophia with an F, sophiafinancial.com/webinar. And we kind of have a, you know, rotating array of topics and times and, yeah, open to more suggestions.
Cool, cool. I'll definitely make sure to put that in the show notes. You said something about the Zoom thing that reminds me. So Seth Godin, such a great guy, was season 1, episode 1. And he said, you know, and this is his opinion as a consumer of financial services, so I really regard it, apart from his body of work of everything he's done before. But when he said this, I was like, man, this is so true. But he was like, he advocated for or gave advice on exactly what you just said. He was like, if you want to be a financial advisor or financial planner, and he's like, if you go organize a couple of different Zoom groups where you're basically organizing these and masterminding these and bring them up topics and just bringing people together to talk about financial topics that, you know, worry them or that they're upset about or whatever. He's like, if you can't do that, he's like, you probably are in the wrong job. And I love it. I'm like, you're right. I'm like, I talked to so many advisors that have anxiety about that. And to your point about what Carl said about playing in traffic, we got to get out there and we got to do it. And what I would say, and I don't remember who said this, maybe it was Carl, but this whole compliance boogeyman thing, yeah, whatever. Like literally, this is what I've said before. And I feel empowered to say this because I've done it. But if your firm is giving you flack about that, you're probably at the wrong firm.
Totally.
100%. You're probably at the wrong firm and you need to think about making a pivot because there are so many very powerful conversations that can happen in the context of those intimate Zoom meetings or fireside chats, whatever you want to call them, that really give people breakthroughs. And apart from the fact that they probably will become your client because you've built trust with them, this is the kind of stuff we need in an industry. And I almost feel a little angry that good financial advisors, good financial planners are not more of them are out there doing video and podcast and stuff like that to give that information out. So kudos to you for stepping up there.
If I could share one more thing that I'm going to be starting. So I totally stole this idea from Sonia Dreisler. I'm going to be doing an office hours, probably once or twice a month for women in financial advisor world or who want to be in the financial advisor world, who maybe feel like they're not in the right fit, right? Maybe they're at a firm that they're getting weird messages or, you know, I've talked to plenty of women who are like, ugh, I don't think I can stay in this industry because the guys I'm working with are A, B, and C. I'm like, there are other people. Yeah. There are other models, right? So like, I want to try to bring people together to have those conversations. Again, I don't have all the answers, but I'm going to schedule that on a regular basis. So that'll probably be sophiafinancial.com/office hours.
Okay, nice.
I would love to invite anybody.
Yeah. I'll definitely have some ideas for you. We'll talk about that in the green room when we're done.
So, awesome.
Cool. That is great. Like, so as we bring this in for the landing, our landing, you know that this is a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to help them serve their client at the next level, what word or words of wisdom would you want to leave with them?
Oh, just be a sponge, learn, right? And go broad for where you're going to be learning. You know, if you're at a firm and they've got certain amount of training, that's great. Go broader. You should be reading Kitsis. You should be reading Carl Richards. You should be reading Seth Godin, you know, things outside of the industry, because all of that is going to bring you aha moments and you know, come up with your way of having conversations with people and your way of doing it. So yeah, I think that's been the most valuable thing to me over the years.
Oh, wow. I love that. Be a sponge. It's so funny. Three times during this conversation, you don't know it. You were just like all in my notes for my last night's coaching call. I was telling him, I was like, look, go broad. Before you go specific, you should be reading more interdisciplinary stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's like, it makes you a more well-rounded person. So mm-hmm. I love that you said that. Well, Stephanie, thank you. So many gems of wisdom in this conversation. And I really appreciate you coming on to talk about this with us.
You're welcome. It was great to be here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey there. I hope you really enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. First, the best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Next, remember that the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please visit my website at www.domhendersonsr.com and click the button that says, I'd like to learn more. I'd love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now until our next conversation.